evening, everybody, and welcome to this Metro Mayor Hustings event focusing on the Greater Manchester economy, its strengths, its weaknesses, its opportunities, and its threats. I'm Alexandra Jones. I'm the Chief Executive of Centre for Cities, which is the only think tank dedicated to understanding and improving UK city economies. And we're absolutely delighted to be partnering with the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce, putting this event on together. We've got four candidates here with us tonight, ready to answer your questions. The candidates are Andrew Brennan, there you go, Sean Anstey, Conservative. We have Brian Candleland, who is here standing in for Will Paterson of the Green Party. Will is joining us around 6:15-ish, fingers crossed, traffic permitting. We might be talking about traffic a bit later on. And then we've got Ian Roberts, who, from the Liberal Democrats, standing in for Jane Brophy, who sent her apologies. We also asked Sharon Zay from UKIP, but unfortunately he was unavailable and there were no representatives either. So we have these four candidates and I'm absolutely delighted you for giving up your time and joined us this evening. This is how we're going to run the event. So in just a moment, I'm going to invite the candidates, who drew lots, to make their opening statement for 2 minutes, and no more, on their priorities for supporting Greater Manchester's economy. Each of them will speak from here. I will move. I'll be timing these. I'm going to give each candidate a 20-second warning, and then stop after 2 minutes. And then we're going to move into questions and answers, which we want to organise around three themes. Jobs and skills, housing and transport, and business and enterprise. We'll spend about 15 minutes on each. We've had some questions submitted already. Some of you have written some down tonight. So if I come to you, please be ready to ask a question. And if you can't remember what you wrote down, then I'll put it here as well, so I'll be able to remind you. And towards the end of the event, I'll give each candidate a chance to make a brief 2-minute closing statement, which we'll do in reverse order. And we'll be finished by 7 p.m. Before we go on to the candidates, though, I think Chris, you wanted to say a few words from Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And good evening, everybody. It's great to see so many people here. My name's Chris Fletcher. I'm a Marketing and Policy Director at the Chamber of Commerce. And one of the key things that we've been asking for a number of years is the chance for people in Greater Manchester to vote for an elected mayor. It's something we've supported and our members have supported for a number of years. We think the accountability to local level with politicians is something that's been quite poor recently. We see an elected mayor for Greater Manchester as being so important, especially now where we are from the point of view of things like Brexit, what's happening with things like the Northern Powerhouse and all the other influences going on. Now is the time that we need a strong person, a strong voice for Greater Manchester, and we see the election of a mayor as part of that. Obviously, it's very interesting from a business perspective with what the mayor can do, but obviously we recognise it's not just about the business elements of Greater Manchester. It's about making sure that Greater Manchester continues on its growth, continues to be wealthy, but that the population of Greater Manchester can play a part in that as well and can receive the benefits as well. So we're very interested in asking the candidates as well about what they plan to do on that. It's fantastic to see you all here tonight. One little housekeeping note, we're not expecting any fire alarms or anything like that. So if there is an emergency, it's down through the stairs, out through the side exit, and the muster point is just there on Jefferson's Road near the car park entrance. But other than that, I'll hand back to Alex now, and I'm looking forward to what should be a great team. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be here. Right, without further ado, I'm going to hand over to a candidate. So, Ian, you're up first.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me here. Jane sends her apologies. I'm speaking on behalf of Jane Brophy, the Liberal Democrat candidate in the mayoral election. Unfortunately, you've got me to blame for being four men in dark suits rather than having a woman up here. So, how do we grow Greater Manchester? How do we grow our economy and not leave people behind? That seems to us to be the key question. And we have some choices to make, both choices as a sub-region, as Greater Manchester, and actually choices as a country. Do we accept across Greater Manchester? Do we accept urban sprawl, more car use, more pollution by building on the Greenbelt? Or do we find a way to unlock those urban sites? Is Depot Mank just about cranes in Manchester city centre? Or is it about regeneration in all the towns and cities across Greater Manchester? Is this a shared project with the people of Greater Manchester? Or are we just telling people what's going to happen, crossing our fingers and hoping that they'll come along? we continue to accept that cities like ours are going to be the poor relation to London in terms of investment and public funding for the foreseeable future? We have a vision for Greater Manchester. We believe we need national policy changes to actually invest properly in our region. It's unacceptable that if we are serious about Devo Manc and about the Northern Powerhouse, that London gets so much more investment than everywhere else. Increase the density of population in our towns and cities instead of building on the green belts. That allows us to unlock better public transport and cut car use. Very difficult to cut car use if you're having urban sprawl. An open discussion with residents about the future of Greater Manchester. Grow our economy, grow our skill base, and grow the incomes of people in Greater Manchester.
Thank you very much. I know this seems harsh, but believe me, it does help get through some more questions. I think this event really is about making sure we're here for the candidates, there will be more time for responses to questions, but actually getting a chance for you to ask them. So can I ask Brian to come up next, please?
Right, can you hear me? Yeah. Will should be here in about 40 minutes, so until then you've got me, unfortunately. The first thing I'd like to say is that we've actually been very critical of the Green Party of the whole way that the devolution agenda has been progressed. We would actually prefer to see a genuine northwest region rather than splitting up different cities. However, I would accept that Greater Manchester is probably the most self-contained conurbation outside London. We are where we are. So I can assure you that as Greens, we will fully engage with the process as it is to get the best quality of life for the people of Greater Manchester. I'd like to echo the previous speaker in emphasising that this is about 10 boroughs. We have sold Devo Manc on the basis that it's getting power away from the southeast. We don't want to repeat that pattern within Manchester and focus everything on the city centre of Manchester. And that's why the spatial framework doesn't work. We need plans for affordable living in all our town centres to bring people closer to the jobs and services that they need to access and boost local small businesses. The second point I'd like to make is that the massive threat of climate change and other environmental constraints means that business as usual is not an option. Future economic activity within Greater Manchester must recognise the need to minimise carbon emissions. That challenges some of the conventional growth plans that people might have. But I would argue that the transition to a green and sustainable economy is a better route to jobs in the future. Manchester and its surroundings have a long and proud tradition of innovation. Here's an opportunity to extend that into the future. So I'd just like to close, therefore, with a statement which Will particularly ask me to include. For all the talk of the Northern Powerhouse, for the people who live in Greater Manchester, this isn't just a powerhouse, it's our house. So let's build it together. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much, Brian. Sure.
Well, Alex and Chris, thank you very much. And a very good evening to everybody and welcome to this. It's great to be here. This is our opportunity in May to do something very different, to take the mayoralty and make it mean something to the 2.8 million people that live in Greater Manchester and the many businesses that we have here in our city region. And there's three things that I want us to think about as we go through this campaign and into the mayoralty. I'm concentrating on how do we make sure that Greater Manchester is more global, that it's global in its outlook, that it's confident on the international stage, that it's attracting investment and jobs and skills and transport that we so want to see that will help us to be able to link economic growth with the prosperity of the people that live in Greater Manchester. We need to support our universities to be able to do that at the same time. Secondly, I want to make sure that we are wealthier, that the people of the city region, our families and our places are wealthier than what they are today. We've got to ensure that we make sure that as we grow our economy, people feel the benefit for that. Too many people today get up early in the morning, go home quite late at night and don't feel like they're being rewarded for it. So how do we use powers that we're getting over our skills system to make that happen? And thirdly, I want every person in every place to be able to realise their full potential, to make sure that all parts of the Greater Manchester are firing on all cylinders. We can do that in a devolved environment when we look at people's wellbeing, when we look at how we support businesses, when we look at how we get young people to become work ready, how we bridge that gap between education and employment. All of these things that we can do in May. And for the Mail to be successful, and I obviously would say this to you, you need, I think, a Conservative Mayor could work with a Conservative government very well. But equally important is to have a Mayor who could work with the other leaders of local authorities here in Greater Manchester. And I'd put to you that I'm uniquely placed, having done that for 4 years and been on the devolution agreements written, to understand them and to make sure that together we can use those powers to create a new and bold Greater Manchester. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. 4 weeks today, we'll be going to the polls. It's a big moment for Greater Manchester, and I truly believe we're on the verge of a great era. But as well as being a big opportunity, it's a massive challenge too. We've got huge pressure on our public services, unprecedented numbers of people sleeping rough on our streets, and of course Brexit, the challenges that Brexit brings. I would say that this is a cabinet-level role that requires cabinet-level experience, and I am the only candidate in this race who can provide that. I can give you and us a voice that will be heard on the national stage. But beyond the experience, I've got the vision too. This, as the modern industrial capital of our country, but also crucially, a place that leaves no person nor no community behind. To deliver that, we need a plan. In the manifesto that I've developed, working with people across Greater Manchester, our manifesto, I've laid out a plan for skills and young people with a new university-style application system for apprenticeships. I've suggested a plan for infrastructure, both transport, but also digital, which is going to be needed if we're going to put Greater Manchester in that position of leadership. Thirdly, a plan for growth, where we focus on those high-value sectors of the economy, advanced manufacturing, low carbon, but also health and care too. Those areas that are really going to deliver the jobs of the future. Put a plan behind them to give the growth that Greater Manchester needs. I am standing in this race to be my own person. I will be a pragmatic, pro-business mayor, a voice for everybody. I believe I've got the right experience, the right vision, and the right plan to take Greater Manchester forward.
Very much, and for sticking to time, I really appreciate it. And we're going to get on to questions now. And Chris, I think you're going to ask the first question on behalf of the Chamber.
We've heard a lot around three important areas: the housing part of the special framework, transport, and skills. And they're the real sort of bedrock on which the Greater Manchester economy is built. Obviously, things need to change, and that will cost money. In a time of increasing budget cuts and other challenges yet to be foreseen, what changes will need to be made to local financial raising powers and local funding, and what changes would you introduce to enable that investment to be made in those critical areas?
Right, I'm going to mix up the order, so there's a different person first at each time. So Andy, can I come to you first?
It's going to be difficult, Chris, isn't it? I'm under no illusions about that. I think we will have to do more ourselves. So I did mention poor sleeping and homelessness in my opening statement. I recognise that we're going to have to do politics differently. So I've said that I would want to create a mayor's fund to tackle homelessness and poor sleeping. I've made an ongoing commitment to donate 15% of any salary that I'm given if I'm successful. And the reason I'm doing that is because I would want to go out to other people and show leadership across Greater Manchester to say, look, I want you to back me in this. I want businesses to back me. Let's do the right thing as people in Greater Manchester want to do. And that is about solving more problems ourselves and raising more funds voluntarily. At the same time, it's about using the public money that we have more effectively. Now, I would draw my knowledge as Health Secretary to undergo a major reform of the way the health service works. Currently, we don't spend a few pounds well in people's homes on decent social care, but we spend hundreds, if not thousands of pounds, as people become trapped in hospital for weeks on end. I would oversee a major change to the way the financing of the health service worked, move towards what I call a year of care approach to funding, so that for the first time in its 70-year history, the National Health Service is given an incentive to support people properly in their own homes as opposed to wait for people to come in through A&E and get paid by every person who comes through the door. So it's about being quite radical in our willingness to reform the way finance in the public sector works. I would also, lastly, have a focus on the first 4 years of life. All of the evidence tells us if we invest more in those first 4 years of life, we will save much more money later down the path. So I've suggested that all public bodies in Greater Manchester should sign a commitment to work together to deliver school readiness. So that they work to have all four-year-olds arriving in reception class in Greater Manchester in a position where they've got social and the language skills so that they are ready to learn. I would say in an era of continuing pressure on public budgets, we are going to have to think very differently about the way those public services work and develop a Greater Manchester preventative model of public service. And that is what I would argue from my experience of being a Cabinet Minister in the Treasury, in the Department of Health, and also Shadow Education, Shadow Home. I've got that broad experience at the top of politics that puts me in a position where I can drive that reform.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think and the very heart of the question, if you think about the evolved environment and what devolution should mean for Greater Manchester, it does mean that we can have more effective use of public sector funding across Greater Manchester. But the heart of the question is how do we raise additional money for the transport investment that we want to see, for the homes that we want to see, and for skills. And I'll just try and cover those two points. And actually, just before I do that, already the devolution agreement that we've done with government today includes a £900 million earn-back model to fund transport investment over the next 20 years. We need to make sure that we use that effectively. But secondly, what we need to think about with our local transport network, if we want to deal with the fact that we've got congested roads and we want to have the Metrolink expanded to all parts of Greater Manchester, we're not going to be able to do that with just hundreds of millions of pounds. We're going to need billions of pounds. And one of the first things that the Mayor needs to do is to say that how do you use revenue-raising powers that we'll have at Metrolink and rehabilitated buses and so on? Are there other things that we could work with government to say that we want devolution of certain duties or levies perhaps that are paid at the same time so that we can massively leverage up the investment that we spend in transport? Because it's absolutely true to say that it's not going to be 100% of government in the future. On housing, I think we can bring together multiple different funds across Greater Manchester. So there was a £2.3 billion infrastructure fund that DCLG announced last year in relation to being able to bring forward brownfield sites for development. Greater Manchester needs to get its fair share of that. As the housing investment fund is recycled, we can make sure that we have more money raised through that. And on skills, I want us to see us to have greater powers and flexibility of the apprenticeship levy, which for Greater Manchester is going to be worth about £60 million a year in our economy. If we can have a greater control and flexibility in that, then we're giving ourselves some real, genuine pots of money that we can be able to apply to ensure that we can do some of the things that we want to do in Greater Manchester. One of the best ways that I think you can get there is by having Conservative money in Greater Manchester.
Thank you. Right.
Yes, well, although I said at the beginning that we weren't happy with the way that devolution has been structured in many ways, we do recognise the need for it. I think it is regrettable that for the past 35 years or so, governments of every persuasion have been cutting local government finance over and over again. If you think back to the heydays of cities of 100 years ago, they had far more fundraising powers than we have now. And I think it's regrettable that the devolution deal doesn't give more more money, a bigger share of the money, and also more fundraising powers to the regions. So I think we need to look at all sorts of possible options, and I would be very open. I think particularly we need to look at what's working elsewhere in the world. We're often not very good at that. Other parts of Europe, for instance. If we can't get more than what we deserve or what we need from the central government, then the more we can look at those options, the better. I can't speak for everything that Will may have thought of, and he may come up with some suggestions when he gets here, but I think it is a very real problem. We do have enormous social needs, as Andy Burnham has mentioned, and I certainly like the sound of what he was talking about in terms of linking health and social care, but there is just, I think we need to be very imaginative and innovative in this as in many other things.
Thank you.
I think think there is a real question about what devolution is, because a lot of people say that this isn't real devolution. It's all the government's doing is handing down a pot of money and saying you can spend it slightly differently. A real devolution would be saying, actually, you get to decide how much money you raise. You get to control business rates. You get to control council tax, other sorts of taxes. The reality is, and you talked about just bringing care and healthcare, and of course, that's very much in the air at the moment, absolutely the right thing to do, but we shouldn't kid ourselves that merging social care and health, the right thing as it is to do, is then going to create lots more money. It won't. The best it's going to do is to allow the system to cope with the amount of money that's currently coming into it. So one of the really important things that the mayor needs to do, I think, is to be lobbying to find ways to bring more money into our region. That might be lobbying government to bring more powers to allow us to raise money locally. It might be going to government and saying, you know what, if you can afford $28 billion for Crossrail 2 in London, maybe actually, if you're serious about the Northern Powerhouse, if you're serious about the evolution of the regions, maybe $900 million is a bit of an insult. Maybe we should have more money for Greater Manchester if you really want to transform the regional economy. The other thing I would say is Jane is absolutely passionate in opposing hard Brexit, and it is going to be very, very difficult for Greater Manchester to succeed economically if the government's proposals for hard Brexit go through it. The Mayor of Greater Manchester has been promised a seat at the table with government ministers, and Jane would absolutely be using that in every way possible to oppose hard Brexit, to get the best deals we can, and try and stop this, the path we're going down at the moment, which frankly is going to leave us all a lot worse off.
Thank you. There is a seamless transition. Welcome, Will, and many thanks to Brian for standing in while I hope Jenny wasn't too bad when I was on the table. Right, we're going to move to our themes. So there will be three themes. First theme, jobs and skills. Many of you, as I said, have submitted questions on email or submitted some tonight. I will get through as many as I can, and apologies in advance if I can't get through all of them. But the first question, Amanda Richardson. Have you got your question? Wonderful.
Good evening, panel. My name is Amanda Richardson. I work for a charity called the Workers Education Association. We're the largest provider of adult education in the community outside the statutory sector. My question is this, panel. There is a recognised need for higher level skills, level 3, level 4 and above in Greater Manchester. However, 11% of Greater Manchester residents don't have any qualifications. How will you ensure that these residents can also participate and progress in learning and skills? And what do you see as the role for adult learning in helping to achieve this?
Great question, thank you. Can I come to Sean first this time?
Yes, I think it's a fantastic question because at the very heart of it, not only is there 11% of our population have any qualifications at all, but 12,000 young people every year are leaving our schools, secondary schools in Greater Manchester, without necessarily English and Latin GCSEs. And so there's a real issue that has to be dealt with if we want to say that the productivity of Greater Manchester needs to be increased, and if we want to make sure everybody and every resident is able to feel part of and included in economic growth across Greater Manchester. There's a couple of things that I think we can do. One, the combined authority will have the devolved adult education budget to Greater Manchester from next year. We need to be able to make sure that our colleges are being incentivised to do the right things, not just to put people on courses that don't actually help people to progress into work. We have the power to do that in relation to the further education curriculum. But more importantly, we need to think about how do we try and prepare people to start work. So at what point is adult education being used? But I think for me is that it's about saying that it is getting people to get those work-ready skills alongside the qualifications that they need if we want to fundamentally transform somebody's life chances. And so I think by applying the powers that we have to adult education in the future and how we use the apprenticeship levy across Greater Manchester, whether it's for traineeships, for people perhaps who aren't even ready to start an apprenticeship, then we've got to I think, understand that there are a wide range of tools that will be at our disposal. And if we use them properly and look at how people can, you know, access courses from a transport perspective and accessibility point of view, then we will be there. And just a final point, the second half of that question is my view about learning is it's essential. What we then need to do is when somebody is supported into employment, we might use the work and health programme to do that. We then need to see in work progression, and I want to see adult learning help people to progress in work in the future.
Thank you very much. Ian.
Thank you. Skills is one of those areas where localism and devolution works. And I say that because successive governments of all colours have tried doing the top-down thing where various government departments say have one big contractor and it goes down to areas. It just doesn't work. It hasn't delivered the goods. But actually, we know that local solutions at council level and at Greater Manchester level can deliver far better results. So rather than give some overall this is how we do it, I would say there'll be different ways of doing it, but an absolute key part of it. So two things. One is, isn't it absolutely crazy that the government says to us, quite rightly, we want you, Greater Manchester, to improve people's skills, to get the skilled up workforce, but actually, anyone who's under 16 you cannot touch, because under 16, even the local councils now have really low control, low impact on schools. And we need to get around that. We need to find ways to work effectively with our schools so we can start getting back towards a sensible integrated system. The second thing is, it's about multiple challenges. It is not enough if someone has been out of work for several years or has problems getting into work to say, oh, go and get these skills and you'll be absolutely fine, you can find a job. People have mental health issues, people have travel issues, people have confidence issues, people have issues with families, being carers, all these things have to be sorted out, and they are really, really challenging. So there are solutions, they are local, but we shouldn't underestimate how difficult it is. if we can pull together the system to work effectively, right from young children upwards to adults, we can start doing it, but it is going to be a big, big job.
Thank you very much. Andy?
Well, if you look at the productivity gap between the north of England and London, the biggest reason for it is the skills gap. And I would say that's a product over many decades, actually, of a university route obsession in terms of national education policy. I think it's left a lot of people in the adult workforce without the skills that they need, so you're absolutely right to raise the issue. What can we do about it? Sean made some good points about adult education and the changes that could come there through devolution. But to be honest, the big answer to your question is to really do something in terms of what you want to see. I think it's about us, all of us, together, making an argument for full devolution of the DWP budget. Because I don't believe that money that is spent on that top-down, tick-box, sanctions-based approach to support is actually helping deal with that problem. I feel if we had that money here in Greater Manchester under our control, we could link it to our voluntary sector organisations, local organisations, brilliant organisations like yours, which I know a lot about, our businesses too, to deliver more personalised support, individualised support for people, to give them the skills that they want to get, because it's their passions. It'll help them rather than making them go through the hoops that the DWP say. So that would be the first thing I would say. The second big thing is obviously you've got to stop people coming through the system with nothing. And that means we have to have a big change here to the way politics has worked. For as long as I've been in politics, and this is true at local and national level, politicians have made young people the target for cuts. Why? Because older people vote at election time or make the promises to people who are going to vote. How do we pay for it? Or take it off the people who don't vote. That, in the end, takes us to where we are today, with a generation that is really struggling to make its way in the world. The big thing I want to use, devolution should mean we're going to do things differently. And this is what I'm saying to all of you. Let's stop this thing of making what Westminster does, make young people the target for cuts. Let's, as Greater Manchester, make young people our priority for investment. Because I can't see how you can rise to the challenge of Brexit in any other way. We have to help that next generation come through. So it's why I'm saying I'll start by giving young people half-price bus and Metrolink, building towards a free bus pass. building it in even further to an opportunity pass, a new way of supporting young people to get access to those opportunities, so that they go through school with hope that there is something there for them at the end of school. If we are to close this skills gap in the country, we need to think much bigger. As I say, my answer to you is devolution of the DWP budget and beginning to make young people our priority for investment.
Great, thank you, Andy. And Will.
Thank you, Chair. And first of all, thank you to all of you for your patience in allowing me to arrive a little later. Thank you to Brian for covering for me in my absence. In terms of this, I would agree with actually points that all of the panel have made so far. We do need to make sure that adult education is strong. We do need to make sure that workplace training is strong as well. And we need to look at the devolution settlement. We need to push for further powers in terms of the DWP budget, as Andy said, and in terms of education, as Ian said as well. And of course, the qualification system that we have is still too heavily geared, in my opinion, towards a strict academic learning approach. So we've seen the rollout of the university technical colleges, for example. And that's a great idea in terms of recognising that not all young people learn in the same fashion. But then they're still assessed by the same outcomes at the end of it, which seems like a slightly ludicrous process in separating young people in terms of how they learn and how they approach education, but then treating everyone the same way at the end of it. It seems slightly absurd. So what can we do about it? In terms of the actual getting those powers to actually shape the argument, this is why I want to push a basic income for Greater Manchester. This is why I want to work with central government to enable that to happen. Because what often happens is people get trapped into a career path that they don't particularly like. They want to actually explore what options they have. They want to pursue further qualifications. But then they're caught up in the paradox that they can't take time off work to pursue those qualifications. And so they never get the qualifications to pursue the line of work they want. But having a system where people can actually opt out of work, that they can actually pursue take a career break to actually pursue the qualifications and the study they want, and still ensure that they are supported, then we make sure that people can make these changes and can progress further and later in life.
Thank you all very much. The next question, Lynn Collins. Lynn, you asked two questions. Can I ask you just to ask the first question?
I think it's be best anyway. I'm Lynn Collins from the Northwest TUC. I wanted to ask the panel two things. What practical measures would you take as Metro Mayor? And also, how would you use your leverage as Metro Mayor to ensure that workers in Greater Manchester have got decent jobs, fair pay, and good employment standards?
So can I come to Ian first of all, please?
Thank you very much for the question. This is fundamentally, it's about skills, it's about productivity, it's about growing the economy. Because as Metro Mayor, you're not going to change the law, so we're not going to suddenly come and say, you know, here's Greater Manchester's got different employment law. What we need to do, if we're actually going to help people, is to make sure that the high quality, well paid jobs are there, that people have the skills to take up those jobs, and that they're actually able to do it. So it follows on from the previous question very well, actually. How do we do that? It's about bringing the system together. It's about making sure that people do have those barriers removed to employment. It's about local solutions to skills. It's about getting the best deal from Brexit. It's about bringing in investment. Because frankly, if the jobs aren't here, if the businesses aren't here, if businesses that are here aren't able to export effectively around the world, then at the end of the day, it's going to be the workers who lose out. It's going to be not the people at the top, it's going to be the people at the bottom who lose out. So we need to have a strong economy that works for everyone. We need to make sure that we're having new businesses, that the businesses here are doing business right across the world, give people the skills, and that's how, at the end, we're going to do the best job of actually protecting people in the way that we want.
Great, thank you very much. Will?
Well, I'll start by pointing out that, for me, this is why we need to decentralise the economy of Greater Manchester. It's all well and good targeting the city centre and places like Media City for the higher power jobs, but if we don't distribute those jobs and distribute those opportunities fairly across the city region, we end up with situations where towns on the outer boroughs do lose out, and that then creates problems further down the line. It's also why I'd query aspects of the spatial framework as well, particularly the focus on jobs in the logistics sector, in warehousing and distribution, because those are jobs in sectors that are going to be targets for automation in the future. And so it seems to me that on that aspect, spatial framework has been a missed opportunity, because we're planning for the jobs that are around today, not looking at the jobs that are going to be around in 20 years' time. So what I would say in terms of the direct side of things is pushing for more green jobs, pushing for sustainable jobs to roll out, for example, sustainable energy and energy efficient homes across Greater Manchester. That's something that can boost the construction sector, can boost building and refurbishment programmes across the region. But also what I want to do is I want to push for a real living wage. Now, obviously, as Ian pointed out, that's not something that we can do that will be legally enforceable. But at least we can make a start, and I know this is something that Andy are working on as well, in terms of seeing that the combined authority, at the very least, does pay its workers a genuine living wage that actually meets the bills, rather than the government-appointed living wage, which is, frankly, nothing of the sort. It's about making sure that the combined authority's suppliers pay that living wage. It's about working with the councils and the other public bodies across Greater Manchester to see that they pay the living wage and their suppliers do. So there are practical steps we can take, and as well as that, it's something that we can open to other businesses and actually set up an accreditation scheme to certify that these are businesses you can trust to pay their workers a fair day's wage for a fair day's work.
Thank you, Will. Sean?
Well, I think it'd be very hard the question to acknowledge I think what Ian is saying, is that actually skills and in-work progression is particularly important. So there are too many people in Greater Manchester who are doing jobs that are at the entry level of the labour market and are not progressing on, and therefore I don't think are feeling the reward for the work that they're doing. And we've got to change that if we want to be able to say that our residents need to be able to feel included as part of the growth that is happening here in this city region. And so in the conversation that we've just had before in the previous question, making sure that our education is used to its fullest effect to ensure in-work progression is step number one. I agree with the point that we should make sure that the combined authority is leading the way. What I'd also just say about wage pay is it disproportionately affects women. And I've pledged in my manifesto, it's a commitment I made at the Women's Supportive Party proceedings that we did was that I would work with them directly, practically, to say how can we make sure that we are looking at those sectors that traditionally have women in employment and that traditionally are lower paying, to have a better standard of employment for those people in those roles. Because if we do that, then we're making sure that everybody feels part of it. And the third thing that I'd say is we have to plan for new jobs and new homes across Greater Manchester. And so we'll have a debate, and we'll come on to it, I'm sure, about the spatial framework and the allocations, which really may be subject to our subject to consultation. But having a plan is critical to ensuring that our economic prosperity for Greater Manchester is there, but also that people are part of it. If we don't have a plan, you see the consequences of that in London, Bristol, Cambridge and Bath, where you have sort of a rush hour that lasts all day, not just at the start, the end of the day, where the cost of living is so high that actually it's disproportionate to people's income. So I think we need to be very careful and plan and then take a decision on how we grow Greater Manchester in the future if we want to get to the very heart of your question, which is how do we make sure people then feel like they're rewarded for what they do.
Thank you, and Andy.
Lynn, implicit in your question, I think there's a real opportunity for Greater Manchester, which is to develop a new relationship with business. I think if you look at it, the mayor and the combined authority will succeed if they really capture the spirit of this place and its people. And I think that's the spirit is a radical one. This has always been a home of prosperity, of strong businesses. But those businesses, if you go back to the Victorian era and even before, gave back to our communities. And we're still blessed today with businesses who are members of this chamber who think in that way. Yes, they want to succeed. But I've already got offers of people saying they will help with the drive we're doing on rough sleeping. So there is a kind of willingness there, a natural willingness to contribute as well and build a stronger society. And we've got other places don't have that in the same way, so we've got an incredible opportunity. What I would say to answer your question is, and you asked about leverage, well, I will unashamedly, unapologetically back Greater Manchester businesses first with the public investment that is at my disposal. And if there's an advantage of Brexit, maybe we'll get more flexibility to do that if the state aid rules are relaxed as part of the negotiation. And I will take that, and I will say, right, we'll back you even more because we will put you first. But then comes in the relationship. I will say to them, but there's things we want you to do, and Will was hinting at this, in terms of a good employer standard. So yes, we would like you to pay the living wage to everybody, not just to over 25s, everybody, so everybody can get some basic security in their life. We don't want to see enforced zero-hour contracts because they don't help people get on, they make people rely on food banks. We would like to see the gender pay gap closed. We do want you to put more apprenticeships onto this UCAS-style system that I want to develop. Crucially, we want the big players to pay the small businesses on time. We don't want to see late payment, because late payment can send small businesses to the wall. You get where I'm coming from. I think we've got a chance here to create a new contract, really, and say, look, this is the kind of relationship that we want, and I think that very much speaks to the spirit of Greater Manchester in its past, and because of that, it's got a real chance of success.
Thank you very much, I'd like to, there's a couple more questions on skills, but we're a bit short on time, so I might come back to those, but I'd like to move on to our second theme, which is housing and transport. Is Andrew Needham in the audience? No, it was a great question. It's a shame. About HS2 and HS3, so we may come back to that. Is Jonathan Lowe in the audience?
I am Jonathan Lowe, I'm a local charter council. With recent news of diesel car charges across UK cities, what shall we expect to do on city centre driving, diesel cars, Metrolink, and congestion within Greater Manchester?
Some interesting kind of hints at congestion. What do you do about it? And obviously debates about congestion charge, which I'm mentioning because Centre Cities raised this, and many of you were not so keen on the idea. I think it's fair to say. Sean, can I come to you first on this one?
So I think some of this is under the answer that I provided before. We can only do something about our transport network, both our highway network, Metrolink investment, buses, if we have a fiscal platform that's enabling us to invest quite considerable things into our transport system. Because if we don't do that, then we're not going to be able to fix the issues that are identified in your question. I do think there's a couple of things I've said in my manifesto around how do we try and make our environment and our air quality better than what it is today. Pledge to a green bus fund to ensure that we continue that investment in more efficient vehicles that are coming into the city. And I've also said that I'll start the process of converting those vehicles that are perhaps in fire and rescue service or in Greater Manchester Police into lower emission vehicles at the same time, so that we can ensure that again, the public, the mayor, the command authority are using the powers at their disposal to show what it means to ensure that we can try and have. We'll lead the way in what we're seeking to do. If we can do both of those things, then maybe others will follow. We've got to, I think, then see how can we have a spatial plan that allows us to grow Greater Manchester in a very sustainable way. And one of the ways we do that is by getting a plan in place so we can say where do you want new roads to be, where do you want your transport links to be, how credible those transport commitments are. I think is an important part of the next phase of that plan. If we get that right, then not only will we be helping to reduce and alleviate congestion, but we'll be making Greater Manchester easier to get around, and there'll be a profoundly positive economic benefit for that if we can get through it.
Great, thank you. And now I'd like to come on to Ian, please.
Thank you very much for the question. In my opening statements, I talked about the challenge of building on the green belts and how urban sprawl actually leads to more cars and more pollution, because public transport relies on high density, either high density of jobs or high density of housing. That's why you get one bus a day in little villages and you get regular travel to the centre of the city. So if we go down the route in Greater Manchester of building out onto the green belt and having low density housing, we're essentially saying the future, for the foreseeable future, is more cars, more pollution, and we're not going to get the ability to put in the public transport we need. But if we can instead find ways to unlock more sites across our towns, then we can increase the density of housing across the towns and cities, and we can get more and better public transport. And that's really important. I think it is, frankly, disgraceful that a government that talks about the Northern Powerhouse does fund so much more per head on public transport and transport generally in London than in Manchester and the rest of the country. I think we need to tackle that head on, to be absolutely honest. And I would also say, Just for the record, Jane would certainly oppose introducing a congestion charge at this stage. We did have a referendum 10 years ago. An important part of democracy is that people get to change their minds when we have regular general elections, but it was 80-20 against, and I've seen no particular sign of people changing the public mood. So I think we would very firmly oppose a congestion charge at this stage, but there is a great deal we can do. Frankly, pollution is killing people, killing hundreds of people every year. And as we grow our economy, that means more journeys. So we need to find ways to get people out of their cars onto public transport, and that means making it economic and getting the funding we need.
Thank you. Andy?
I certainly agree that congestion is driving poor air quality. We need to do something. But also, I think it's the biggest threat to our competitiveness. I think anybody coming in here through Manchester Airport who's going to drive around for a day and say, well, is this a good place to invest? May end up at the end of the day saying, you can't get around this place, it doesn't move. I think we all experience it, don't we? It's getting worse all the time. The journey time's getting longer. We've got to do something about it. I agree with Ian. I don't think we go back to the congestion charge. I'm sorry, to the centre of cities. But, you know, it's not just that we had a referendum, which we did. If you represent a constituency like mine that isn't on the rail network, and where people and the bus services aren't good enough, you cannot just hit people with a congestion charge because that's a straight tax. Unlike London, they don't have alternatives they can go to get to work, and that's why essentially it can't be done in Greater Manchester, in my view. But we need a plan for congestion, and I will bring one forward in my first year if I'm elected on the 4th of May. Let me give you the elements that will be in that plan. Firstly, I will use the powers demanded by the Labour leaders of Greater Manchester as part of the devolution deal to re-regulate the buses. The free-for-all is part of the problem. You've got buses nose-to-tail on Oxford Road, the lucrative routes like that, nowhere to be seen on our more isolated estates. Consequently, in the 30 years since deregulation, bus usage has gone down and down and down in Greater Manchester to a historic low today. We've got to get quality bus services that cover everywhere to get people back on the buses. Number two, I would build a high-quality cycle network all over Greater Manchester. Whatever our view of the future needs of our conurbation, promoting more cycling has got to be a part of it from an environmental point of view, but also from a health and quality of life point of view. Number three, I would have a focus on the pinch points that we've got on our roads. Look at whether we could encourage more car sharing in the bus lanes. I think there's things to be done in terms of the road network that might ease the problem. I would require better train services that run later into the evening, longer through the new franchise, longer trains so that people aren't crammed together. Together with business, we must make the argument to make the Conservatives stick to their manifesto pledge to put serious investment into west to east rail infrastructure across the north of England. In my view, the single highest transport investment priority for this country, higher than HS2 and certainly higher than Crossrail 2, and we must hold them to that. But the last thing I would say, and this is where I agree with what Ian said, rewrite the spatial framework. This place won't move if we just keep building on the big green sites by the main roads. We have to rebalance housing development back towards our town centres, our smaller town centres, and revitalise them. Because if you build there, it's more linked to the public transport network, and we have a chance of delivering the new homes while not making Greater Manchester grind to a halt. So an ambitious congestion plan is needed within the first year. I will bring one forward if I'm elected as mayor.
Great. Thanks, Andy. And Will.
Well, firstly, John, can just tack on the first part of your question in terms of the high polluting vehicle that you mentioned as well. I noticed that today the UK government has promised help for diesel owners. I'm still not entirely sure what that entails, and I think that's one where all of us are going to have to watch and wait to see what comes out to see how we actually deal with that. If they're talking about helping diesel owners move to cleaner alternatives such as hybrids or electric vehicles, then that's absolutely something I would support. If they're talking about refunding congestion charges and emission charges, then that's definitely exactly the wrong approach that we need to be taking, and that's something I'd challenge. Certainly, I want to push for London-style low-emission zones around the key pinch points. And I think the key point is, and Ian and Andy both touched on this, it's about making sure that public transport is the mode of choice. It's making sure that we actually have quality services. One thing you find in Greater Manchester is that however you get there, there are certain routes, certain journeys that are stressful regardless of the mode of transport you use. And we want to try and rebalance that. We need to make sure that in every single case, public transport is a more positive option than getting into your car and joining the queue. That's the absolute priority for me. And that's why I'm unashamed in my focus on local rail services, on rolling out electrification so we have a broader and faster programme for that, on getting the Metrolink connecting not just the individual communities of Greater Manchester with the city centre, but connecting the communities to each other in a better fashion, pushing for an outer circle rather than just every single journey being into the city and out again. And as has been mentioned as well, it's about refocusing the spatial framework, looking at how we, instead of build out, building in, building houses that are closer to the jobs and closer to the services, building more jobs in our town centres across Greater Manchester. This is why I keep banging on about decentralising the economy. If you have to make every single journey into Manchester, then of course you're going to have high congestion. If you spread it out, then you can perhaps ease things a little bit there. And of course, we've actually got the technology now that means we can work with businesses to push for more flexible ways of working. People do not need to be working the same fixed hours. This is no longer a 9-to-5 culture, it's a 24-7 culture, and we should support businesses who want to support their employees to work the hours that they would prefer where possible. We have the technology to see that people can work from home more easily. And that's something we should take advantage of as well. If people don't need to travel in to the city to do their job, I should be forced them to.
Thank you very much, Phil. Conor, I did ask a question about the congestion charge, which I think probably the candidates have broadly answered. So can I call on Brad Dodgson? Who isn't here? But excellent. Would you ask your question? Can you remember it?
Not really.
Would you like me to read it? You can check that I'm reading it. Okay, let me give it to you.
I just wanted to ask what your opinion on the Arms to East Rock is, and if you'll be backing the conductors to keep their jobs.
Okay, and the person I'd like to go to first on that is Will, please.
Well, I was caught up in the last RMT strike. I had a journey from Wigan to Ashton-under-Lyne, which normally would be fairly straightforward, but was actually made pretty complicated by the strike. Also made complicated by the fact that there was absolutely no way on earth I was crossing an RMT picket line. And I absolutely support this strike, because ultimately we talk about the experts a lot in government and in policy. We talk about expertise and we talk about experience. You'll have heard that word experience several times tonight already, I'm sure. But when we actually are discussing matters such as transport policy, we overlook the people who are on the front line every day. We overlook the rail unions. We overlook the workers who are there every single day and know exactly the pitfalls of the system. And when they are saying, we need people doing this job, you listen. So I think this strike can be ended quite easily by Northern Rail listening to their employees, listening to the people who are there every day, and listening to the passengers who are overall supportive of the need, because they recognise the need to have someone on the train there to help when they need it. And that's why I oppose this strike, not because of the RMT, but because of the intransigence of the train operating companies. It's time for them to listen. It's time for them to get round the table. It's time for them to deliver the rail service they promised us in the first place.
Excellent. Thank you.
Well, I think it's probably not for the mayor to straight away say we support a strike, because I think the mayor's job is going to be to get both sides around the table. But I think it's true. I mean, you've got to get a negotiated solution first and foremost. That's the mayor's job. It's not to necessarily take one side above another, because obviously the mayor's got to represent the travelling public as well. And so I would say the first thing to do is get the two sides down together, get to the bottom of their concerns. Now, I was told there's going to be no loss of jobs necessarily with the move to conductorless trains. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, that's what I've been told. If there's a safety concern, and I think there is a safety issue about whether or not you can have driver-only trains without it compromising safety, then that needs to be looked at. So my approach to these things, and I've dealt with it as a minister over many years, where, you know, it's not our job I don't see it as my job to necessarily say, oh, I'll be back, you know, the strike come what may. You've got to take a job in terms of, you've got to be fair to both sides. And what I always try to do as a health minister is get people to sit down and negotiate and solve solutions rather than just going into kind of polarised positions that in the end probably often don't help either side. So I'm just giving you an honest answer. The mayor's job, it seems to me, is to be that kind of crucial person who can get the two sides around the table, knock sense into both of them, and get a deal that works for everybody. That is, let me be clear, fair to the employees of Northern Rail. And that is fair in terms of numbers of jobs, but also their working conditions, and crucially, not compromising the safety of the travelling public.
Thanks, Andy. Ian?
On Jane's behalf, yes, Jane does absolutely support the concerns of the RMT. I think there are two main issues. One is, although for shorter trains and trams and those sorts of things, driver-operated might be acceptable, when you get longer trains with long carriages and curving around on platforms, there is clearly a safety concern. I think that's absolutely right. And the second one is, I'm not sure anyone entirely believes the rail companies when they say all jobs are safe. Yes, of course, they're saying, well, you'll still have people on the trains, but there'll be customer care. I think you have seen elsewhere that those get lost over time, and clearly one of the reasons for doing it, from the train company's view, is so they can run trains when the conductors are sick or doesn't turn up for whatever reason. So for those reasons, Jane does support the concerns of the RMT.
Great, thank you, Sean.
Well, so my view of this is that there has to be, well, there is a solution to any problem that's raised, and our political system should be used to be able to try and find an outcome that is preferable to as many parties as possible. If we can do that, then I think what we'll be doing is to say that the evolution to Greater Manchester, to the north of England, our transport for the North Works to be able to support a resolution here, I think is important. It is important that we look at how we can ensure that our rail industry is better than what it is today. The people who work on the rail industry are a key part of making that happen. And so we need to ensure that people are brought with us through these disputes. But look, I think much of what Andy has said, this is about saying that we need to be able to find an outcome to what is clearly a dispute, but at the moment isn't going very far. And when we've reached to the last resort that people do of striking, that is incredibly disruptive both to the travelling public but also to our economy at the same time. But we need to try and get, I think, a solution that will work for the workers but also for the rail company. I'd like to see us have greater control in the future over transport policy in the north of England, which I think will help us to be able to resolve some of these issues before they arrive in the future.
Great, thank you all very much. And there's been a few questions on the environment. Can I ask Patricia? Patricia? Yeah, can I ask you to ask your question? Do you remember it?
Patricia Spray from Tree Station, which is a wood yard in Manchester. I know that sounds weird. We bring the wood from tree work all around Greater Manchester, deal with it within the yard, insure it and sell it and reuse it in some firewood, so it makes sure all the wood stays in Manchester. So that is a really closed economy. We're protecting the environment, local jobs, everything. Just want to know what the panel are going to do to to organisations like this that work to combat Manchester's climate change. I know this is, but it is the economy, because it's the economy, it's local jobs, local housing, local resources.
How are the candidates going to be looking to you as mayor
support
environmental businesses and protect the environment? Is that
that's it? Yes.
Lovely. Andy, your turn.
I think the first way to kind of come at your question is by saying it's the level of ambition that we set first and foremost, isn't it, as Greater Manchester, in terms of carbon neutrality. I think currently we're on a pathway to meet it around 2050, which doesn't seem particularly ambitious to me. And if I compare that to what other cities are doing around the world, they're looking much more at mid-2030s as the time when, if you were to meet carbon neutrality then you're not going to do permanent and lasting damage to the planet in respect of temperature rise over the course of the century. So I think we should put ourselves in that club, really, as you know, a kind of world-leading green city that has the same ambitions as the most forward-thinking cities around the world. And so what I have said is, within a year of being elected, I would hold a green summit within the city, where I would invite all stakeholders to say, well, what should our new ambition be? What's a realistic ambition for Greater Manchester to aim towards in terms of carbon neutrality? And I think we do need to be looking at a much accelerated date, somewhere in between 2030 and 2040. And then if you come to that new thing, then I think everything that flows from that helps organisations like yours. I take the view, actually, that people might see this as burdensome on business. To be honest, I see the opposite view. The quicker we get ourselves into a more ambitious way of thinking about low carbon and the green economy, the quicker we'll be putting our own industrial base in a position to face the future, bring their own running costs down, you know, enable them to kind of pioneer technologies that will be then marketable around the world. I think this is a kind of crucial part of our economic story going forward. And I think by bringing forward the ambition, we will both support our own organisations within Greater Manchester that are acting in this space already, but I think we'll be putting our own industrial base in a much stronger position more quickly to face the future.
Thanks, Andy. Sean?
So I think the first thing that I can do is to support organisations like yours, because if we have them where our ecosystem is being used to say that the people and businesses of Greater Manchester can help propel Greater Manchester forward, then that obviously to me appears to be the right thing, the most sensible thing for us to do. I think we then need to think about, well, we've been fortunate last year to go and visit Houston. In Houston, they have green highways around all of their highways, and you wouldn't know that there was an eight-lane motorway, would you? Because you're down into some very, very green spaces. I think we need to look at how we can look at best practice around the world to ensure that our environment is greener. That as we plan through the spatial framework in future, what the spatial framework does today is plan for new communities. It doesn't perhaps reflect as much as it should do. What are we going to do to green our existing communities and make them greener? And I want us to ensure the next iteration of the draft does that. And then I've made a pledge to be able to say that we need to plant 10,000 trees across Greater Manchester in the first mile term, to do that with other organisations across the city region. Because the quality of somebody's lived experience of being here, especially in an increasingly competitive world where, you know, digital infrastructure, how we support businesses, is in some respects similar in different cities. We've got to have a distinguishing feature that makes us an attractive place to invest, to live, to learn, to grow up. And I think we can do that by doing some of the things that I've talked about, but also by being very clear about how we're going to have a focus on that quality of life that is so much about making sure that people feel prosperous, supported and comfortable in the environment that we're creating for them.
Thanks, Sean. Will, open to you.
Well, Patricia, businesses like yours are absolutely the lifeblood of what I want to see for Greater Manchester. I want to put us in a position where made in Greater Manchester is shorthand, that it means that anyone who sees those words on a product can understand that it's reliable, that it's responsible, that it's been ethically sourced and sustainably produced. So the work that you're doing is absolutely amazing. And I want to reach out to businesses like yours and cooperatives like, for instance, the Greater Manchester Renewables Partnership, to reach out to make sure that we have those sustainable businesses providing support and being a part of the infrastructure and a part of the delivery of a real green revolution in Greater Manchester. But one thing I would say as well as a part of this is why I'm a little bit nervous of using the powers in terms of raising the business rates. Because I've seen so many businesses like yours, small businesses, people trying to pioneer new ways of doing things, actually run aground at the first opportunity because the rents are too high and the business rates are too high as they already are. So this is why I'm very sceptical about that part of the devolution offer. That's why I'm very sceptical about that part of the deal. I don't want to make it more difficult for smaller businesses, ethical businesses, sustainable businesses, to take part in our economy. And I think that raising the business rates would do that. So I want to try and keep the rates as they are at the moment. I want to make sure that businesses like yours are a part of the plan, that when we're talking about green jobs and talking about a plan to bring current housing stock up to sustainable energy levels and to make sure that energy efficiency is as good as it can be, we're making sure that out in our planning regulations that new built homes meet the energy efficiency standards of the passive house standards. It's about making sure that businesses like yours are a part of that plan to push for green jobs, climate-friendly jobs across Greater Manchester. you're at the heart of all that.
Thanks, Will. And Ian?
Thank you. Thank you very much. We absolutely need to be ambitious about carbon targets. And Jane is really passionate about the environment, about businesses like yours. Actually, what we need to be finding out ways to do is to not just keep you going, but to allow you to grow. Because the reality is in this country, if you look at renewables versus non-renewables, there is not a level playing field. They are funded in different ways, they're supported in different ways, but actually, non-renewables get a lot of support from the government, and renewables don't at the moment. And that's just not fair, and it's not right, and it's not the way to get a carbon neutral economy. So what we need to do is to find ways to, as I say, support businesses, but actually grow successful businesses and make them into real Greater Manchester success stories, and to find ways to get away from this situation we have at the moment, where fossil fuels and non-renewables get effectively unfair funding, and make sure there's a proper level playing field so renewables can thrive, because that's the only way we are going to get the carbon neutral economy that we want and need over the coming decades.
Thank you very much. I mean, I think that question really spanned housing and transport, but also our third theme of business and enterprise, but certainly want to move on to that now. Simeon Brown? Yeah, question from you, please.
One of the best things about Greater Manchester is that it's not London when it comes to affordability matters. How do you ensure that crowding in new private and public investment doesn't create an unaffordable and unequal city, especially when it comes to the housing stock?
Great question. Ian, welcome to you.
So one of the interesting things about Greater Manchester is we've built quite a lot more houses over the last 10-15 years. Nearly all of that growth is in the private rented sector, which is really quite stark. So the number, if you look between 2001 and 2011, the figures for the number of private owned houses has actually gone down, the number of social owned houses has gone down, the number of private rented houses has nearly doubled. And private rented, of course, is the most expensive way, generally speaking, to live. It's the way that increasingly young people are being forced to, because they can't afford to get a foot on the housing ladder, and no more, or not enough, social rented is being built, which, you know, it's absolutely trivial compared to what we need. So as mayor, Jane is about really turning that around and finding the mechanisms. And you know, we have those tools, because we have those tools over planning. And I think we can really start to tackle this and use block planning. This is one of the areas the Greater Manchester Spatial Framework is just not doing the job, frankly. We need to make sure there is more social housing coming forward. We need to make sure that when Greater Manchester has a £300 million rolling fund to invest in new houses, it isn't just being invested in nice flats in the centre of Manchester and in central Salford, but is actually being invested in houses and flats and apartments that we need right the way around Greater Manchester, particularly in all the town centres that are struggling. So it is a real challenge, but it's one that I think the Mayor and Jane as Mayor is absolutely determined to use the powers that the Mayor has to really start tackling and to start turning back this tide where, by default, private rented has become the solution.
Great, thank you. Will?
Well, one of the key things here is when we keep talking about devolution so far, and we keep talking about the candidates' ambitions for Greater Manchester, often it gets locked into a cycle of competition with other cities in the UK and across the world. I don't want Greater Manchester to be scrapping for a place in the league. I want Greater Manchester to be in a league of its own. And so this idea that you said right at the heart of your question, that Manchester's not London, that's how I want it to stay. I want us to be doing our own thing. And how we do that is, first, we remember that Greater Manchester is not just one great place to live, it's many great places to live. It's Manchester, yes, it's Salford, it's Wigan, it's Bolton, it's Bury, it's Trafford, it's Rochdale, it's Oldham, it's Stockport, it's the communities in Tameside as well. We remember that, we make sure that we're not just focused on the centre, and we try and build all of our communities to reach their fullest potential there. And we do make sure that we have the housing that people need. We make sure that we're building smaller properties. Ian, you touched on the private renting sector. I'm a private renter myself, so I can actually confirm you what you just said there is experience that I've gone through. I've been bounced into that because, frankly, there's no real option. We need to make sure that we are building more social homes. We need to make sure that the housing we're building is for a different range of people as well. Make sure that we're focused on 1-2 bedroom properties as well as the larger ones to make sure that people don't find themselves caught up in the bedroom tax, for example. But one of the things we do need to make sure is that while we're noting the number of people who do rent, and we're noting that that means that people perhaps don't get put on the property ladder, we try and make sure that we don't talk about rent and rented property as a negative thing. Because what I'm really frustrated about is that there's, ever since Right to Buy came, there's been a stigma over rental, this idea that you're less of a person, that you're less of a success if you don't own your own home. And I find it intensely frustrating that we've moved from the house being the place where we live, the place where we grow up, where we raise a family, where we have our ideas, where we rest our head at night, has become little more than a portfolio. I want houses to be homes again. I want to push for a rented sector that's strong and thriving and diverse, and to make sure the renters have rights within that too, that they can have access to living rent rates, that they have access to proper living conditions as well, that landlords are rewarded and celebrated if they do right by the tenants. That's my vision, to make sure that we have that mix of tenure, that rental is not seen as a negative, it's seen as just another way of living, and that it's not just about Manchester, it's about the whole of Greater Manchester.
Thanks, Phil. Sure.
Well, I think this is one of the biggest areas where we can make the most of the opportunity that is coming to Greater Manchester in May, because I think about why why we face some of the social issues that we do today. It's because our politics is paralysed by indecision. So we've not made the decisions that we know are the right ones in the long term because of our short-term political interest. And it's really important for our mayoralty that when we say we're going to do something, that we actually do it. Because otherwise, we'll just all be sat in this room agreeing that there's a housing crisis, that the cost of living is going to go up, and that we should want better transport links and so on. If we don't do something so fundamentally different with this mayoralty, we'll be having the same conversation in 3 years' time, 4 years' time, 10 years' time about why we're still facing these issues. And we're not held back by what London is inhibited by. And it's much more difficult to fix issues after the fact than it is to plan for them in the first place. And so that's the first thing that we need to do, is get through our plan for homes and jobs in Greater Manchester. But I just disagree with Ian, is we haven't built half enough of what we needed to have done over the last few years. We've seen over the last decade, we need to considerably increase the homes that we're building in Greater Manchester and make sure that we have that tenure mix of different supply in the city region. If we do that, we can afford it. We should have a target to say that no more than a third of somebody's income should be spent on housing costs in Greater Manchester. We should make sure that we're making homes affordable to people. And that's going to need us to take some decisions. And if Greater Manchester's population is going to grow by 300,000 people over the next 20 years, that's like adding, it's the equivalent of adding a borough the size of Stockport into Greater Manchester. So if we don't allow this city region the space to grow in future, all we're going to do is pile pressure onto our existing communities. And I don't want us to do that. I think we need to be bold in what we're doing in future to say that, of course, we need to get the right places to grow, and that will be the subject of the conversation. But at some point, we've got to take that decision. Otherwise, we will become like London. Cities either go forwards or backwards. They never stand still. And our mayoralty, and my mayoralty, I think, will make sure that we go in the right direction.
Thanks, Sean. Andy?
Well, I'm as proud as anybody of the progress that we've seen in Greater Manchester over the last 20 years. In large part by the Labour Council, the Labour leaders. However, I think we've got to be honest and say there's been a blind spot. And the blind spot, it seems to me, is over building truly affordable housing. We have had a situation where we've had a system that's been too developer-led, in my view, where we haven't necessarily built homes that communities need, where the government gave us a fund that has been for the exclusive use of large private sector organisations that have built buy-to-let properties. And consequently, we have seen a process of gentrification happening in parts of Greater Manchester that is similar to London, where people who have grown up in those places have been pushed out, and that has created a sense of resentment. And actually, I think you could probably argue that it's made Greater Manchester quite divided. You know, you don't have to walk far from some of the kind of gleaming areas to see some then real deprivation close by, and it's kind of a sense of two worlds if we're not careful. So I think there has to be some real change in the way we're approaching housing, and I agree with a lot of what Ian said at the beginning. You know, the problem with this the spatial framework is it would focus on an oversupply, really, of a certain type of home. You know, the spatial framework is about building more homes, as Sean was just saying, but that's not good enough. We need a spatial framework that will solve the housing crisis. That's what it should be doing, making sure that there are homes being built for everybody in every community that they can afford. The current draft simply does not do that. So I would rewrite it, and I would rebalance it towards the town centres, as others have said. And this is where you kind of bring things together with the economic development agenda. I think what we also have to think about is building more homes for younger people so they can get on the housing ladder, so more rent-to-own homes. And I think if you did that, it would also help with graduate retention within the city region. So if you were making it easier for people to get on the housing ladder and possibly building homes alongside start-up space for new businesses and putting those facilities into some of our smaller towns that have kind of been more depressed in recent times, that begins to be a plan for Greater Manchester that is about inclusive growth, which is what the Centre for Cities and others have been talking about in recent times. You have to make it real. And the spatial framework we've got at the moment, I'm afraid, fails in that respect. It is a plan for some people, some communities, but not all communities. So I think your question is a really good one. I think we need a big change, actually, in terms of housing policy in Greater Manchester to build that mix of housing within all communities so that everyone's got a stake in them.
Thank you very much. I'd like to get one final question in, then I'd like to go to the candidates for final brief statements. Hugo, we had a question which a few people have kind of asked similar ones. Hugo?
So given that small and micro businesses often face prohibitive administrative and logistical costs when setting up, what plans do the candidates have for tackling these issues? And more specifically, what do the candidates think of kind of leveraging the existing expertise that larger and more established businesses in Greater Manchester have to kind of help these small businesses grow into this future?
Great, thank you. If I can ask you to be reasonably brief in your responses so we can get to the closing statements. So can I go to Will first, please?
Well, you're absolutely right that small micro businesses are part of the future, making sure that we have a localised economy. That means that suppliers don't actually have to travel that far for their markets, and again, that clients don't have to travel that far to source the goods they need as well. So those small businesses, those micro businesses are absolutely a part of that. As I said in an earlier answer, this is why I'm very reluctant to increase the burden through an increase in the business rates, even if it is for something as worthy as infrastructure investments. It's just going to make a problem for the micro businesses you suggest. And I do love the idea that you just said of leveraging smaller and larger businesses together. If we try and reduce supply chains, then larger businesses become the first clients for those smaller businesses, and that's where the investment comes from to begin with. It's about making sure that our investment funds, that the investments that the local authorities make, as well in terms of pension funds, for example, we're doing that towards smaller businesses, towards ethical businesses, instead of towards some of the larger, less ethical firms. So there are lots of practical steps we can take.
Thank you. Andy?
I think we need to see much more subsidised business start-up space, particularly in those surrounding towns around Greater Manchester, to help. There's a lack of it. I'm talking particularly about Lee, but I know it's true of other places. There's a lack of smaller, affordable start-up space for new businesses, and I think we should have a programme to put it in place to help those businesses in those critical first few years. Secondly, I think we should do something to change the culture in schools. I would want to work with the Chamber on this. I would actually be interested in an idea of whether we could put some of that startup space in the grounds of schools to start to kind of change the mindset of young people, because I think it's still deep within our DNA because of our industrial past that young people growing up here think that they will be employees but not employers, that they won't run their own business. And I think we've got to change that mindset. The three routes should be there from the end of school: university, apprenticeship, or running your own business. And I think we should be working to bring businesses into schools to make that more of a realistic option, and then getting those businesses who benefit from that free startup space to give back to those young people and build that entrepreneurial culture. So I think you're on the right theme. There's a lot we can do here, but I think we need to be much more focused on those business startups working with the LEP, get that space into those communities and begin to change the culture at grassroots.
Thank you, Ian.
I think we've got the Greater Manchester Growth Hub, which is good, but I think I've seen it from both sides of the fence actually and could do a lot better. Managed startup space is important actually, though there is quite a lot around Greater Manchester which is empty, which suggests to me that the offer is not currently quite right, and we need to figure out why that is and do better on that. The last thing I will say, so we can get on, is exports. Actually, in Greater Manchester, companies do not export as much as they do in London and the South East. And there's no legal reason for that. There's no sort of anything. It seems, whether it's a psychological thing, I don't know. I think something that the mayor needs to do and can do is work with Chambers of Commerce, work with the Combined Authority, raise people's expectations and really work to sell Greater Manchester to the world and get far more Greater Manchester businesses exporting to the world, which will allow them to really reach their potential and become far more viable.
Thank you, and Sean.
Well, I certainly support the idea that you put at the end of your question about getting employers to support each other. That's important. I think that if you look at the work of the Growth Hub at the moment, generally speaking, it does a reasonable job as helping small businesses to start, perhaps less so sustaining them over their first 12 and 24 months. And so we have a good rate actually of successful businesses, but we still see a lot of small businesses that don't make it past those first 2 years. And a lot of the funding that comes for business support in Greater Manchester was previously, and still is actually, still is today, provided by the European Union. So we need to think about how we replace that funding and try and get greater flexibility over there, so that we can offer a greater level of support to small and medium-sized businesses in Greater Manchester. How do we link people with organisations like Chamber, like Pro Manchester, like others, so that we can have that network of support for the businesses to be to start, but then be sustainable in the long term? Because I want to see a thriving business environment across Greater Manchester. We can do that if we can get greater flexibility over some of the funds that are available to support businesses in the first place.
Thank you all very much. You've responded to a wide range of questions over the evening. And what I'd like to do now is, just before we close, a minute and a half, if I may, I'll give you a bit of a time warning as well. We'll go in reverse order and then close promptly at 7. So Andy, can I invite you up first and I will let you on?
Yeah, sure. It's been a great discussion. Thanks to the Chamber and to Central Cities for hosting it. First thing I would say is, you know, I've been part of the success story that Greater Manchester has been over the last 20 years. You know, I helped bring BBC to Media City as Culture Minister, helped with the Commonwealth Games. First message I would say is there's one continuity here. I've worked with Sir Harry, Sir Richard and others in getting us to this point. I'm going to build on those foundations and the strong relationships that have been formed. However, there does need to be change. I mentioned a change in terms of housing policy a minute ago. There needs to be a change there. There does need to be a change in terms of more focus on our outlying towns and the outlying boroughs to bring them into the success story. Give the same ambition for their prospects as we've given to the city centre. But the third area of change is do politics differently. Use this as a moment to break it open and let more people get involved. You know, we saw it through the referendum result. Westminster hasn't worked for people. It's left too many places, too many people behind. What I want to do is kind of leave the same old in Westminster. Open up the decision-making process, involve more of you in how we do things, give a voice to young people at the heart of our politics, help businesses drive policies that will support business growth in the future. Make sure there are more women represented at the top of our politics here in Greater Manchester. Use this as a moment of real change. And what I would say to you is, I've got the leadership skills necessary to bring that forward. I've got a clear vision about where we're going to go, but I'm a grassroots politician. I will work hard to bring all of you with it, because the more that this is done together, the more successful we will be. Greater Manchester has got a strong devolution deal, but we've now got to use it to the full effect. We'd like to be at the head of the game, which is where we are, but we're all going to have to work together now to make this a success, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I will do.
So I think this is, I said before, this is our chance to shine on May the 4th, to do something very different with our mayoralty, to get it off to the best start that it possibly can. We had a choice 3 or 4 years ago as the only Conservative leader in Greater Manchester about whether I worked with other leaders across the city region to do something around getting powers over decisions that affect our lives to Greater Manchester. And I thought to myself, well, this isn't about political interest or self-interest. It's about having a profoundly positive impact on the lives and businesses of the people of this city region. To say that what we've done in the past hasn't worked, that we know ourselves whether we can do the things that are going to make a difference to growing our economy, to helping people progress in work, to making sure that we're trading around the world, that people have a health and well-being, a health and social care service that looks at people's well-being at its very heart, that we want to make sure that we have the transport investment that we all deserve. And I think it's important that we have a Conservative Mayor of Greater Manchester, because I think it would give us the position to be able to say that this mayoralty can be all that it can be. I want it to be so profoundly positive for people in Greater Manchester that we know that in 3 years' time, in 3 months' time, that this is going to be the right thing for us to do. If we can get that right, then I think we will be doing something for a place that we all care passionately about. We'll be making sure that all parts of Greater Manchester are firing on all cylinders. Look, and I'm from here and for here. I care passionately about making sure that happens, and if we do, then we'll be having a brilliant mayoralty for people and businesses of Greater Manchester. Thank you very much.
This is a completely new way of doing politics in this country. It's a new approach to government. It's a new structure that we have in place here. And so I think we miss the opportunity if we go with the same old, if we go with the same old parties, the same old voices, the same old Westminster approach, the same old town hall approach. We have a chance to really change the way we do things. And that requires new ideas, new voices, new thinking. And I offer that in spades. This deal is far from perfect, but that's why I never describe 4th of May as the be-all and end-all of this process. It's merely the beginning of something, and it's what we make of it. What I want to do is correct the mistake that the command authorities made up to now and bring more people into how we do this. Bring the organisations that we will rely on to make devolution a success. This is not the deal that we would have written if the Green Party had been around the table. But what I can say is that if we pitch in and make it work together, then we can improve it, get the deal that we all deserve, get people like you in the room, get people like you to actually help us shape where we go, get those voluntary organisations involved so that we will rely on. And it's about making sure that we deliver together all those things that we can achieve. For me, just devolving power to the city is not enough. We have to devolve it to the citizens, and that's why I'm standing for now.
Thank you, Will. Ian.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here on behalf of Jane Brophy, the Liberal Democrat candidate. Jane, my colleague, I think will be an excellent mayor of Greater Manchester. She's worked her life in the NHS. She's a very experienced local politician, having been first elected as a councillor in Trafford in 1994. If Jane is elected, you get opposition to the Greater Manchester Spatial Framework. It is the wrong solution for Greater Manchester, having the urban sprawl across the Green Belt and not doing enough to build in our existing towns. Better public transport, cycling and walking, something we haven't mentioned this evening. But really getting people out of their cars and looking at all alternatives to make our city work. And if we're going to grow the economy, we need to have other ways to get people around, because more people are going to be making more journeys. We need to bring the skills and education system together effectively. It is far too disjointed at the moment. It's all over the place, different people responsible for different things. It simply isn't working, and we need to fix that. We need to promote the towns and not just focus on Manchester city centre and the centre of Salford. We need to oppose hard Brexit, absolutely critical for the success of jobs and the success of businesses.
ambulance work for integrated health and social care system. So very pleased and very proud to represent Jane Morrison here tonight. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you to all four of you. I think it's been a great discussion. There's never enough time for all the questions, and I think there's plenty more. We can see from the richness of the questions, there's some similarities in responses, some clear differences as well. But whatever happens on the 5th of May, you'll have a new mayor, which creates a huge opportunity for Greater Manchester to have an even bigger role on the national and international stage. So thank you all so much for coming. Can I ask you again to thank the candidates for coming and talking to you.